There's massive opportunities to buy great deals at low prices. They're here today. We're actively acquiring deals between 20 and 40%. Someone's up to nearly 50% discount to peaks. And with the underlying fundamentals remaining extremely strong, it's really, really good signs for the multifamily industry.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
I want to welcome you all back to the second half 2025 biannual RSN State of the Market update. But Ben, quick hello before we dive into the executive summary for tonight.
Indeed. Hey guys, super excited to be here. We put a lot of time and effort into these things, try to condense a lot of information, convey a lot. Really appreciate your questions. Shoot them over as they come through and read. Let's jump right into it, hey?
Yeah, let's do it. So for those people, again, who are new to these webinars, this is a 6-monthly installment of the State of the Market webinar that our RSN we put on. And the purpose of these webinars is to for us as a company to share our insights on the past, the present, and the future of multifamily real estate investing here in the United States, along with responding to many challenges, but a lot of opportunities that we see in today's market. So Ben, with that being said, let's share the screen and get right into it. And tonight on the, just going through the table of contents, we're going to give a bit of an introduction of who we are as RSN, and apologies for those people who are returning. But this is more for the new people and for the recording. We're going to recap on the previous webinars that we've spoken about. Then we're going to get into the past, the present, and what the future holds in today's market and how that is impacting us at RSN, hunting for deals, looking for deals, and then ultimately presenting to them to you guys as multifamily investors. And at the end, we'll probably record here for about 30, 40 minutes. We're going to do a live Q&A. So who we are? At RSN, we've been around for over for 11 years. We were founded in 2014. I'm the CEO and founder, Reid Goossens, and we have purchased in the last 11 years 30 properties in a portfolio worth of a bit shy of $1 billion. It's across 6 different MSAs, and we've been highly focused on value add and core plus investing, trying to really unlock great returns for our investors. We are active in the Phoenix market, Central Texas, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas. We're active in Atlanta. We're active in South Carolina, North Carolina, Gainesville, and we're looking to expand into some of the Florida markets maybe later this year. With that, we have a cracking team of people around us. As I mentioned, I'm the founder and CEO. I've Ben, my business partner, on the call as well. He handles everything equity related and the COO. And then we have got a stellar team supported by Christian, Willie, Mary, Josh, Patrice, Jayla, Patrick, all the people on our team who help produce fantastic investment opportunities for you guys joining us on this call. Now, with that being said, we're going to talk a little bit about the past webinars. And, you know, what we've said on the last few webinars, we've covered a lot of ground. And one of the key points that we've made since doing these webinars, and we've started doing these way back in 2022, is that it's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride for investors. And it certainly has turned out to be that way. The last 3 years have probably been the worst for multifamily industry and the wider commercial industry since the 2008 crash. And we're not out of the woods just yet, but with every downswing in every market, there's always followed by recovery. So let's start talking about, you know, where we think the recoveries are. So we believe we are at the tail end of a record-breaking growth period. We saw the longest growth period in the US from the 2009 to 2020, and then some massive black swan events happened. Obviously, COVID happened. That forced heavily financial stimulus into the economy, which then had a trickle-on effect in terms of inflation. The Fed then started responding to curb inflation and increased interest rates at one of the fastest rates in modern history. And the absolute booming multifamily sector that we had leading up until that point turned on a dime. And we've seen the worst 2 to 3 years probably in modern history. Now, if we talk about the valuations and what has happened, well, the valuations of multifamily dropped inversely in lockstep with the rise in interest rates. And we have seen values today drop between 20 and 50% compared to their market peaks of 2022. Higher interest rates have also caused a lot of deal flow to drop off to really a standstill in 2022, 2023, and parts of 2024. And if you weren't forced to sell, you're just holding on to try and get through to the choppy waters. Now, we can simply say that, yeah, we've talked a lot about distress in the multifamily industry, but here in 2025, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a little bit, the dam wall is cracking and we're seeing a lot of operators in the market today losing or handing back keys to the bank as the extend and pretend comes to an end. Again, we're going to talk about this in a little bit. We personally know a few reputable operators that have had to completely, you know, had equity wipeouts, and that's obviously, you know, extremely terrible to see our peers go through these tough times, and we don't wish that upon anyone, but that is the result of a cyclical market and why we think today is a great time to be buying. We're going to show you some statistics of why we think that. Now, we think there is going to be some more pain felt over the coming 6 to 12 months until interest rates can come down, and Ben's going to talk a little bit about interest rates here in a little bit. However, the bright light is that the fundamentals of multifamily have actually remained really strong, and the underlying supply of housing across the United States continues to operate in a deficit. And depending on the data that you look at, the data source, you know, the US requires somewhere between 3 and 4 million housing. And I'm talking plural, like, you know, both single and multifamilies, just to be built to keep up with demand. And that's today's market. Now, the demand has remained really, really quite strong, and that's because it's continued with the housing affordability issues. And, you know, simply put, this still remains an extremely difficult for the average American to buy the American dream, owning a house, which means people are renting for longer, and that is what we think it can be good for the multifamily investment industry. So all of this is pointing us to a bottoming out and the start of a recovery cycle, and that's exactly what we're going to get into next. So Ben, let's cover and jump into what's happened in the past 6 months.
Absolutely. Thanks, Reid. The past 6 months have been one of the most volatile periods in recent history. Uncertainty has touched every corner of the economy, from the Fed to foreign policy. Multifamily, like many sectors, felt the impact, and we're going to walk through what happened. And look, love him or hate him, Trump's return has been the single biggest political and economic variable of 2025. We're not here to take sides. We're here to assess the objective impacts on the multifamily space and investor psychology. Since January, nearly every market narrative, from tax reform to tariffs, has been shaped by this administration. And here are our predictions before Trump came into office. This is from back in early January. And we, I'll start at the bottom here. You know, Doge was a bit of a nothing burger. It didn't really achieve anything close to what it intended to achieve, and Elon Musk elevated himself to one of the top five most hated men in America. Tax policies are a net positive for multifamily, with the return of 100% bonus depreciation and other tax breaks. In the short term, much of the BBB bill should be net positive to the economy. Medium to longer term, we don't presume to make a prediction. Immigration law has been ruthlessly enforced, just as we predicted, with a large portion of the undocumented population in the US being Hispanic. We predicted an outsized impact on the construction industry. We're yet to see if that actually transpires. Any impact is certainly hard to quantify due to the overlapping impact by the biggest elephant in the room, tariffs and trade wars. We all knew tariffs were coming, but I'm not sure most of us predicted it would play out the way it did. We had Liberation Day on the 2nd of April, and then with the implementation of sweeping tariffs, it resulted in a trade war with China, a truce with China, a pause on tariffs across the board, and now a flurry of deals. All of this has created a huge amount of uncertainty. And uncertainty is sometimes even worse than stiff tariffs and other challenges. It's been very hard for people to predict what's going to come and to make business decisions, economic decisions. You know, the result of all of this was that we had the market crashed, stock market, recession odds spiked, and multifamily investments. And investments just across the board completely froze while people waited out to see what would happen. You know, we saw it firsthand with our latest deal, Alessia Gardens. It absolutely froze as soon as the Liberation Day happened, and it took a lot more promotion, investor education, and outreach than any other deal we've done. Ironically, it might be one of our best performing assets long term. Time will tell on that one. And the uncertainty hasn't fully gone away, but it has stabilized. And if you look here at recession risk predictions and the stock market, it's kind of a proxy for investor sentiment. Recession risk absolutely spiked right after Liberation Day and leading into it. But since then, stabilization has occurred and it's dropped off. And you can see the same thing in the stock market. We obviously had a massive crash and then things have picked back up. So investor confidence has come roaring back, even if the headlines are still a little bit noisy. And we view these as leading indicators. Confidence is returning and so is capital. The other big thing is that we did not get the rate cuts we were expecting. So many expected the Fed to ease aggressively in 2025, but inflation's sticky and Powell stayed the course. In September of 2024, the expectation was for 4 cuts in 2025. By December, that had fallen to 2 cuts. And now in July, we're still expecting 2, but there is talk that it could be as few as 0. Now, the economy and multifamily would benefit tremendously from lower rates, but we continue to think that will happen, but it's just a question of the timeline that it does happen on. For now, we continue to underwrite more conservatively, but if the rate cuts do come, it's going to be all upside. With that, I'm going to hand it back to Reid to talk about the multifamily market today.
Yeah, so thanks, Ben. So let's, as you mentioned, talk about where we are today and some of the key factors affecting how we are making decisions as a company moving forward. So in this section, we'll be covering the evolving distress landscape and how it's impacting deal flow. Then we're going to touch a little bit on supply and the new deliveries and the impact on rents. And then we'll touch on the equity and capital markets. And we'll finally look at how that is shaping what we think the future is going to be. So let's get into distress, right? This is a recap of the previous webinars illustrating the level of distress prevalent across this commercial real estate industry, over the last couple of webinars that we've done, and the level of loan maturity is expected to hit at that time. Now, as a reminder, at the beginning of the rate expansion in 2022, 2023, banks were instructed to work with borrowers to not have a repeat of the 2008 crash. Now, that in turn created a very long extend and pretend issues that we're seeing today that is now coming to roost. Now, if we're taking a closer look at these charts today, the overall data across all sectors is that there is still some level of distress that you can see from the chart. The chart on the right shows an increasing level or somewhat decreasing level, because there are some sectors that are decreasing. But as you can see, the distress in multifamily sector really started increasing significantly back in the middle of 2024. And now it's just shy of 13% delinquency rates across the industry. And that's only second to office at 19.2, followed closely in third with retail 11.5. So it is continuing to get worse. Now, as we look out over the next 3 years, we've got to understand, why is it getting worse? Well, it's because of those maturities coming to roost. And some of those waves of maturities that we thought were going to happen in 2025 are now being pushed into 2026 and 2027. And $769 billion in multifamily loans will mature over the next 2 years, with the majority of that being bank debt or debt fund debt being the largest holders of the impending maturities. So from these graphs and these tables, we can see why, as we mentioned earlier, that we're starting to see blood in the street today. There are some operators handing back keys to the bank, and investors are unfortunately losing everything. Now, a lot of those deals that were built in 2021, 2022 on floating rate debt simply just can't afford to pay the bank. And some valuations are pegged lower today than some of the debt values that those assets were placed on them. And that's forcing banks to now start to have to act. And they can't extend the life of these loans any longer. Now, with some banks seemingly are taking more action, and it's leaving operators in some operators in really bad situations, and they can't refinance, they can't sell for profit. And so they're faced with the reality that we're seeing in the industry today. And we're hearing, as I mentioned earlier, and seeing some banks are taking back those deals. And now some banks are telling us, and we just as recently as yesterday, we were on a call with a bank that are now starting to take short sales, which means that they're going to sell these assets for less than the debt amount. Now, this wasn't happening 12 months ago, which is an indication to us that the extend and pretend is coming to an end, which means we believe it's a great buying opportunity. And this opportunity will not be around forever, which is why it's a time to be buying today. Now, anecdotally, deals that are being done today, at least the ones that we're seeing and the ones that we're underwriting, I would say the majority of them, probably over 60%, have some level of distress tied to their debt finding situations, which is forcing them to sell. Now, again, 12 months ago, we weren't seeing any deal flow of the sort. So it shows how quickly things can turn around. But as I mentioned, these opportunities may not last forever. Now, talk about the doom and gloom side. Let's talk about the supply side and how that has impacted valuations, right? Now, but we're seeing that there is some light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to supply, and it's providing good future tailwinds for the multifamily industry. So just a bit of a recap, over the past 2 to 4 years, we've seen record amounts of supply across all the Sunbelt markets. We have not seen this level of supply since the 1970s. Now, this record of supply has caused rents to flatten or, in most cases, decrease significantly, which is adding a lot more pressure to operators trying to pay that increased floating rate debt on their mortgage they got back in 2021, 2022. Now, the good news is that supply has peaked and we're now seeing housing starts plunge to 10-year lows, which is a great sign for positive rent growth across most middle markets. Now, you might be asking, well, why is housing starts falling off a cliff? Well, there are many factors that contribute to this, and one of them being higher interest rates, but it is a classic tale of a boom-bust cycle, which has played out many times in decades gone by. A lot of houses are built in a short period of time at lower interest rates, then the market shifts, you know, either because they're built too much or because of something else like COVID. Rents flatten or fall, the housing starts dry up, and this is all good news for us as operators and the wider industry as we start to see some tailwinds pushing rents back up. Now, if we talk about absorption, and to a lot of people's surprise, including myself, absorption has been quite strong across the US, and that's really underpinned by the strong fundamentals of multifamily, coupled with the continued issues of affordability housing here in the United States. Now, this graph shows deliveries are stabilizing, which will have a positive impact on rents. Now, if we take a step back and look at the big picture for rents, this slide shows, overall, there's been continued rent growth, and this is a good sign, but we all know real estate is local, and each MSA has its own rent growth trajectory based on that particular MSA supply and their absorption story. So we showed you this slide earlier on in the last webinar, and this has actually been updated with today's data, but it illustrates individual MSAs and how they are handling their own supply and absorption issues. Now, as you can see, the markets in yellow section are in positive rent growth territory, like Tampa and Riverside here in California. But the good news is that most of these hardest hit markets, except for, by the looks of it, Denver and Austin, will be in positive rent growth territories within the next 6 months. And we can actually attest to that in this graph, because our assets in Phoenix, Texas, and the Carolinas have already reached rent stabilization and are starting to pop into positive rent growth territory, which is, you know, a good sign for that. It's a good sign for us. Now, as we look ahead at this graph, it's showing that, you know, the rent growth over the next 5 years, as a prediction, I'll say, is very, very positive outlook. You know, future rent growth is tied to the continued positive fundamentals of the multifamily industry. And that's what we think is, you know, really buoying us as sponsors to continue to look for great opportunities right now. But we also can look at some other real-time data. And we looked at the top 50 markets across the United States and that have experienced significant year-over-year decline in vacancy. So when you combine this with rent stabilizing, in the hardest hit markets, it's showing that we're starting to come into a bit more of a recovery, or we're bottomed out. And this brings us back to the underlying story that we're entering a new growth cycle for multifamily. And now is a time that, you know, we personally think we can be picking up some fantastic assets at some deep discounts to the market peaks. And again, anecdotally, we have picked up a couple assets in the last 6 months between 20 and 50% below the market peaks. But enough about that. I'm going to hand over to Ben, who's going to talk a little bit about the capital markets, both institutional and crowdfunding.
Absolutely. Thanks, Reid. So let's talk about the capital markets. This is where the rubber meets the road, because even with fundamentals improving, deals don't get done without equity. We're starting to see capital move again, but it's cautious, picky, and slower than we expected. So there's going to be a story here about early mover advantage that I'm going to keep hitting on, but institutional groups want multifamily. They love the story. They see the future. Some groups have already jumped in, but many more are, you know, sitting on the shore, haven't quite dunked themselves in. Their return targets are often unrealistic, and some of them are hesitant due to macro risks. Retail investors typically lag the big money, and they are even more cautious. We expected more momentum by now, but hesitation persists. Of the institutional groups, there is a tremendous amount of dry powder sitting on the sidelines. hundreds of billions raised between 2020 and 2022 remains unspent. It's not a matter of if that capital will be deployed, it's a matter of when. And here's the catch. Many of these funds are nearing their deployment deadlines. Investors are growing impatient and redemption requests are rising. And all of this is pressuring these institutional groups to put capital to work now. Deals will happen soon and they're going to happen in volume. Now, I'm going to cover the next 3 points here with anecdotal data. These are the kinds of things that you only hear through industry group chats, informal masterminds, peer-to-peer conversations. A lot of this isn't going to come up in fancy graphs or data sets that gets published in the news. But what we are seeing on the ground is that strong institutional groups are locking up deals like they have for years, and they're failing to fund them, failing to find the equity. Syndicators are struggling to raise capital in a big way as well. There's a much larger pool of syndicators out there as well. And because of that, ad costs have exploded. Competition for investor attention is at an all-time high. And in this kind of environment, some groups attempted to stretch the assumptions and projected returns to attract investors to their deals. This means exit caps that may be too aggressive, rent growth projections that assume a perfect world, or mid-deal refis based on best-case rates. We only say this to encourage you to do your due diligence and thoroughly examine the assumptions behind any deal before investing your hard-earned money. Let's talk about the future here. So where are we headed? Again, the distress is working itself through the system, green shoots are emerging, and we're entering a phase of price discovery, recapitalization, and resurgence. However, as Reid mentioned, many of the historical deals are deeply underwater. They can't refinance, they can't sell, banks don't want the assets, these operators are stuck, and many of them are not going to make it out. Now, falling interest rates are something that might save many of these deals. If rates drop and rents rise, the assets will stabilize, they'll be able to be recapitalized, and they'll sell or refi themselves out of trouble. This is a best case scenario, certainly not guaranteed. And unfortunately, many assets just have too big of a funding gap, and they're just not going to be able to save themselves. So the debt exceeds the asset value, and there's no realistic path to recovery. And we're, as we mentioned, we're seeing lenders foreclosing on deals now. And as of the last literally couple of weeks, at least for us, we're seeing these lenders willing to take haircuts and actually take a loss themselves just to get the assets, the debt, the loans off their books. And in cases where banks do have the option to extend and pretend, we do see more mortgage modifications, loan modifications. They're going to push these deals further and further down the path in the hope that the market, rents, and interest rates save them. There's a lot of rescue funds and preferred equity groups out there that are coming in and putting money to bridge this funding gap and either taking over the deal or setting really aggressive terms where they're going to make great profits for themselves. But again, unfortunately, many of these deals won't be able to hold on, and there's going to be full equity wipeouts. And that's a really horrible thing to happen. All of this is going to come to a head, and the winners are going to be value-add operators who are best equipped to take on distressed assets with deferred maintenance, shoddy operations. Retail and institutional investors with dry powder ready to deploy are going to capitalize, and operators without distressed assets. It takes a huge amount of time to do a loan modification, to deal with a distressed asset. Any time that you're spending doing that, you're not spending on growing the NOI of your portfolio. Losers are going to be historically over-exuberant syndication groups, any lenders who are unable to extend and pretend for any longer. And as I've said, it really is horrible, but we're going to see a lot of common equity wipeouts. There's retail investors who invested heavily that are likely to be hurt the most. And there's going to be institutional investors, pension funds, and others that continue to take hits as well. So in addition to that, we're going to see continued market uncertainty in the future. The tariffs are still in flux. They could be inflationary, there could be trade war risk, there could be other market dislocations. Of course, there could be upside scenarios too. There's going to be increased revenue to the Treasury. We might see more onshoring of jobs in the US. There could be a boon to various US industries. Watch it closely. Geopolitical risk, there's always US-China tensions, especially with the tariff activity right now. There's a proxy war in Ukraine. Anything could happen there. Middle East conflicts are always simmering, and that could impact oil prices and more. And there's economic shocks of various kinds always lurking. And Fed policy, Powell's going to be out next year. And while he's only one of 12 votes on interest rate policy, Fed chairs carry an outsized weight above a 1 in 12 vote. So when he's out, we're expecting Trump to install a dovish Fed chair that will push for lower rates. What happens between now and then is less predictable, but we do see rate cuts coming. Of course, no matter who is in charge, of the Fed. They're going to have to respond to whatever happens in the economy. And then we've got stock market valuation risk. When markets are higher than ever, there's always uncertainty. Now might be a good time to rotate into alternative assets like real estate or even things like gold and crypto to be more defensive. The AI boom is really what is driving markets right now. I saw a recent article that we've got $400 billion in investment in the next 12 months coming from just Amazon, Meta, Google, Microsoft, and Oracle. AI is absolutely eating the economy, and it is the industry to watch. And the big thing here is, how does it all impact multifamily? And we see deal volume massively increasing. This is going to come from distressed assets hitting the market, but also performing deals that are just trading at adjusted prices. Institutional capital will follow the herd, especially once FOMO kicks in, and retail capital will be right behind that. But the window to buy these assets at a deep discount is shrinking. Those who move now will capture outsized returns, again, bringing it back to the early mover advantage that I spoke about before. And with that, I'm going to pass it back to Reid to talk about specifically how us as RSN are responding to all of this.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. So as we look forward, you know, we can clearly see the sentiments of this webinar is that, you know, there's massive opportunities to buy great deals at low prices. They're here today. We're actively acquiring deals, as I mentioned earlier, between 20 and 40%, someone's up to nearly 50% discount to peaks. And with the underlying fundamentals remaining extremely strong, it's really, really good signs for the multifamily industry. As Ben just mentioned, the big question is how quickly we'll recover. And this is tied, in our opinion, to if and when the Fed interest rates come down and how much further, or is this the new norm? Obviously, rates, we think rates will drop, as Ben mentioned, in the next 6 months. It will have a positive impact on multifamily valuations, and it will also have potentially outsized impact on returns, particularly if you couple that with such big discounts that you're picking up assets for. So we are doubling down on this generational buying opportunity. We think there's a lot more distress out there, and we're seeing that. We're having active phone calls with banks willing to get rid of deals below their debt number. Again, that's something that's only really recent in the last couple of months. We're deepening our partnership with institutional capital who's looking to jump back into the pool. And obviously, we're leveraging AI across multiple areas of our business as AI is, you know, taking hold across the economy. So with that being said, we do have a few investment opportunities that are still left over for those people who are interested. Alessia Gardens, we closed on this just a couple of weeks ago. We still have a few more spots in that opportunity. That's a core plus deal in Gainesville, Georgia. We picked that asset up for a 32% discount to market to peak. Summit 401, 2012 vintage in Fayetteville, North Carolina. That deal has is already closed. But we do have limited spots left, and we've got a really quick funding deadline. So if you are interested to get involved in a deal today that is, actively gets your money working for you, then please reach out to us. And obviously, we have a very, very robust pipeline of upcoming deals. So if you're a 1031 exchange investor thinking about selling a deal, you want to roll it into one of our deals, let us know. If you're co-GP, fund of funds, family office, whatever that is, you want to come JV with us, please let us know. We have a lot of opportunities for future investments right now. Now, with that being said, in conclusion of this webinar, we want to thank you all for jumping on and listening to us. We think it is a great time to be buying and capitalizing on this distress. The fundamentals remain strong. The future rent growth remains strong and absorption remains very strong, which is only good signs for a recovery. And this is underpinned by the continued housing affordability issues in the United States, which is forcing people to rent for longer, which is all positive signs for our industry, which could really be a once in a lifetime opportunity. So we hope you've enjoyed this webinar. It's a short 30-minute webinar. If you do have any questions, please chuck it in the Q&A. That's what we're around for now, to answer questions live, because a lot of people out there do have questions that, you know, they want to ask us about the portfolio, about how things are going, about how we're managing it. This is your opportunity to ask us as sponsors, anything you want. So please let us know. And Ben, we can turn our cameras back on. And I've got one question here right now. From Sharif, what's the latest mark-to-market rules requiring banks to mark down loans with underperforming assets? Look, Sharif, I can't speak to every single bank. I've had a handful of conversations with some banks. I will say, anecdotally, beginning of 2024, when everyone thought the dam was breaking, I toured a dozen deals in Central Texas. And there was all a shopping expedition to use those BOVs and offers to go and get negotiating power with banks. You know, I still remember vividly a lot of deals that were, you know, at the time I was pricing them below the debt. And I told that to the brokers. And they, you know, all of a sudden the deal goes away. There's nothing to be said because, you know, the sponsor had negotiated something with the bank. Today, that's not happening. So, like, I submitted an offer the other day. It was below the debt. 3 days later, I'm on a call with the bank. So things are happening in real time. How that bank marks the market, not sure. But they're willing to take a haircut, which is something that is not being noticed, you know, at least in our small world. It hasn't been not noticed much so until now. So hopefully that answers that question. How are you financing, fixed or floating, agency or bridge? So it depends on the deal. We just did our first bridge deal on a deal in Dallas in 3.5 years, 4 years, I should say. That was because of the distress that the deal was in. Now, that particular deal, we bought it for way less than what the seller paid for it. So and just where the occupancy was, it didn't qualify for agency. But two other deals were bought with Alessia and Summit 401. We just showed you on the screen. They're both agency deals. So their, you know, occupancy is good. They're just, you know, they have looming deadlines of the existing sellers need to get out of them. So it just depends. And we're seeing interest rates. Like, we just locked an interest rate the other day on a refinance at 5.05% in a deal in South Carolina. So, you know, we're seeing some really good rates coming out right now. Cap rates have massively expanded. The Fayetteville deal, we're buying at I think a 6.2% going in cap rate, and we've got fixed interest rates at 4.8%. So there's massive positive leverage day one. So we're seeing a lot of positive leverage going back to fundamentals of what you should be buying assets for. So hopefully that answers that question. Could you please reply to my email as I arrive late? Okay, Mike, we will reply.
Send a replay.
Gotcha. Yep.
Everyone's going to get a replay in their inbox tomorrow.
Yep. George, how is Phoenix market going? There was an increase in delinquency in several of our properties there. Is the situation getting better? Yeah. So there was probably 18 months ago. All our delinquency is less than 2% right now. Now, you've got to understand, we at RSN, we do cater for workforce housing, and it's just a whack-a-mole game. Like, with the cost of living still remaining kind of high, cost of eggs and petrol and gas and all that stuff, like, there's going to be the thing that keeps popping up, someone, you know, needs to get evicted. But by and large, delinquencies come right down to us at less than 2%. That's just keeping on top of it. In terms of Phoenix market itself, like, that graph we showed earlier about starting to, there was three sections of the graph. There was declining rent, declining vacancy, declining occupancy, I should say. Then there was stabilizing rent with, I think, increasing occupancy. And then there was increasing occupancy and increasing rent. Phoenix has already turned a corner. It probably turned a corner middle of last year, where we had that shift of, high delinquency. All of our four assets in Phoenix right now are sitting at 95% plus, with some positive rent growth on lease trade outs. So we did see a big decline in like you saw across the Sun Belt. But, you know, we're back to sort of more normalcy. So when I say normalcies, you know, studios are renting between 900 and 1,000 bucks, one bedrooms, 11 to 1300, and two bedrooms, 14 to 1500. And that's pretty common across, you know, Central Texas, Atlanta's, North Carolina. So hopefully that answers it. We think Phoenix has actually bounced back better than, say, another, you know, golden child, which is Austin. Austin is not faring very well. They're still in mid-80s occupancy with a lot of delinquency, and that was because of a lot of supply issues. And, you know, there's the tales are two different stories. So, you know, Phoenix has turned a corner. Austin, on the other hand, has not. So, you know, watch his space as that goes out. Sharif, outside of Monday Properties, what are some of your favorite So Monday Properties is not a property management company. They are a strategic investment group out in New York City. A big shout out to those guys out there. who are partnered up with us. We still use local property management companies in all of our MSAs across, so just ask me which MSA you like and I'll tell you which property manager I like. Thoughts on asset livings, acquisitions, CalCap properties, and FPI and the consolidation of other players. It was always going to happen. I didn't know of CalCap. We used to use CalCap. I'm not going to comment on them. Not going to comment on asset living. It's been recorded. But it was always going to another company that we were with many years ago, Roscoe Property Management, went through the same sort of expansion. They were just in Central Texas and then they're blown up as well. Greystar's picking up a lot of smaller companies. So it was always the way it was going to go. The professionalism in which property management companies are run as a business and from vertical integration just meant that it was always going to go that way. So, it was just a matter of time. So we're still a big fan of going with a local group, less than 10,000 units in the management. So when we come to them and we have, 600, 700, 800 units with them, we're one of their bigger clients. We just don't like, working with the big guys because we just get lost in the noise. Hope that answers that question. How are rising insurance premiums and property taxes impacting NOI and what strategies? So insurance premiums are actually coming down. We have seen a lot of players coming back into certain markets that they weren't in. Yes, we saw probably the biggest increase in insurance from 2023 into 2024. But now with our size, we're actually looking at master policies, which means we can bring insurance rates down. So that's how we're combating it. But in general, the market is, swings and roundabouts. It's coming back. So it's not a bad time to actually get insurance right now. A lot more players are coming back into the market. Taxes, real estate taxes are going to be real estate taxes, right? The beauty of buying at discounts to market peak, say in like Central Texas, is that they base the real estate tax off the value of the asset. If you're picking it up at less than what the previous owner picked it up for, then you're obviously going to have a reduction in real estate taxes. And if you're underwriting to that, then and the numbers still make sense, then it's only gravy on top. And if you get a better, you go and appeal the real estate tax or whatever it is, and you get a better upside, then that's great. So for us, we're underwriting realistic insurance premiums, but we're also picking up assets at less than what people sold them, acquired them for. Thus, we're getting lower real estate taxes. Hopefully that answered that one. Do you plan on exiting earlier than year fives on some of your recently acquired? So the short answer, that's a good question. My philosophical hat, right, is I'll put that on. Real estate has always been a medium to long-term investment. I come from a country in Australia where, if you double your money in 10 years in real estate, you're doing just fine. We all got a little spoiled with doubling people's money in 3 years and, high octane flipping and doing all that stuff. We are just seeing a reset in the market, and that's going to go back to a 5 to 7 year hold. So, I'm not trying to scare investors off. It's just the way it's always historically been, and it should be treated as such. So the short answer to your question is we are modeling 5, 7 year holds on all of our assets. The longer we hold, if we put fixed rate debt on it, the better it is. If interest rates come down, it's only helps our exit. We're putting agency debt on most of our stuff, and we're just taking a bit more of a longer term approach. And that's how I think that's the stabilization we're seeing in the market today.
Right. And I will add to that. We do have some investment options, including on Alessia Gardens, we just talked about, that is a shorter hold as well. So if you are prioritizing shorter term holds, still reach out to us. There's different things that do come up occasionally.
Which markets are showing the most resilience in terms of rent growth and occupancy growth? Well, if you flip back to that slide, I think there's surprisingly, Riverside here in California, Tampa was one of those slides, which I, quite surprised about. To be honest, Phoenix a little bit, because it had a lot of supply. It's still going through a little bit of supply stuff, but it's been able to absorb it. I think resilience. Being quite impressed with some markets over other markets. I point to Phoenix and Austin just because I've got assets in both those markets, but they were both the darling children of the growth stories post-COVID. And one has done well and one is not doing so well. That doesn't mean I don't love Austin. I think Austin's a great long-term market. It's just how other things play into because there's still people moving to Austin. There's still growth going on there. It's just there's other factors that play into it. You know, how does one city adapt when so much population growth comes to one city? Phoenix may have done that better than Austin. I don't have any data for that, but that's just anecdotal, right? So in general, the markets we're actively in, I'm seeing a lot more sort of, we've already bottomed out and starting to see that positive rent growth again. So again, we're in Atlanta, we're in Phoenix, we're in Austin, we're in San Antonio, we're in Dallas, we're in South Carolina, we're in North Carolina. So there's been all those markets we've ridden out the storm and now coming into some healthy occupancy and healthy, rent growth.
That's it. And I'll add to that as well. If you remember the slide we showed on the screen with the, hardest hit, MSAs, that is literally the hardest hit MSAs. The majority of the country has been seeing growing rents and stable occupancy for, the last few years, even in the depths of, the challenges that we've seen in the multifamily industry. So it's a really good sign that the hardest hit markets are now stabilizing and on the path to positive rent growth. And keep in mind, the reason most of those markets got hit so hard is because it was such a desirable place to live that developers started building houses and building properties like crazy, and the market was then flooded with houses. Now that's all turned, and we've got that situation we talked about where there's very few starts happening in these key markets, the cyclical nature of real estate. But anyway, I digress. It's a story of rent growth and occupancy across the country and going forward at this point. I'll answer this next one, actually. Do you plan on doing anything on-site in Fayetteville like you did in Dallas? For people who aren't aware, we do investor meetups as often as we can. We're a remote team. I'm located in New York. Reed's located in LA. We have staff all over the country. Some of them are near our assets. Some of them are near equity centers like Miami and whatnot. It's challenging for all of us to get together. We all have young families. So anyway, there's no immediate plans to have an on-site get-together in Fayetteville, but we are having discussions about this, and it may be something that we do. And, it would be some kind of fun event. We'd have an open bar. We'd have food. We'd do some kind of property tour. So let us work on that and get back to you.
Do you want to answer, how does the new build impact K1s?
Sure. So there's going to be an increase in the amount of passive losses that are flowing through to investors on their K1s because bonus depreciation has jumped from 40% now to 100%. And that bonus depreciation is retroactive to, I think, the 20th of January. We see anywhere, we say typically 50 to 60% of your initial investment in an RSN deal is going to flow back to you as passive losses on your K1, which can be used to offset other passive income. That's probably going to tick up a little bit, or it is going to tick up a little bit because of this bonus depreciation. It's hard to say until we actually do the cost seg and do the taxes and do the analysis how it's going to play out, but it is definitely going to be positive. So for those investors that are seeking maximum tax benefits, it's an absolute boon, and it just makes multifamily, a better place to be parking your money to capitalize on those tax benefits.
Now, Ron's talking here about the terms of the South Carolina deal. That's a refi. It was two deals we bought in 2022 with fixed rate local bank debt. We were able to pull out, I think, $1.6 million. It's a tax abatement deal. We're getting in the terms on that to 5-year fixed. What else? 5-year fixed, interest only for the next 3 years. So we've gone from interest only to interest only. Yes, we got a plan to hold those assets for 5 years, but come out in this environment with a positive, money out, positive refinance. And a really attractive interest rate with another 3 years IO and a 5-year runway is a win in my books. And investors are pretty happy with that. And it's continued to distribute some money from the assets over the last 3 years. What range of dates, rates and terms are you seeing in your major markets? I think, Ron, you're talking about interest rates, I think you're talking about. So if we just look at the history, so we close on a deal in last year in San Antonio, we got a 4.97%. That was agency. We closed on another agency deal, Alessia Gardens, which had a 5.04 interest rate. Another agency, Fayetteville. A VPL was another agency deal. I forget the interest rate we got on that, but I think it was very attractive at like 5.35. Fayetteville, North Carolina, that's an assumption deal of 3%, and we're getting a supplemental on that. So the combined across the supplemental and the existing is like 4.68, and we're buying that thing at like a 6.2 cap going in, so plenty of positive leverage. So you're sort of floating in the upper fours, lower fives. We're underwriting to a 5.25, 5.5, and if we get better than that, it's great. Usually 3 years IO, 5 year term. And then you sort of we're getting tricky with the spreads. Example, we got a good spread and got less than 5% interest rate because of that spread. I think it was the spread was 125 basis points over the SOFR or over the 5 year treasury when we locked, because we did a self-imposed 80% of the units needed to be at 80% AMI. If you did the calcs, 80% AMI was already above market rents in that particular market. So it was a no-brainer, and we ended up getting 15 basis points off our spread. So little things like that we're doing just to help the spread and help the interest in positive cash flow. Impact on tariffs and goods like steel, lumber, and construction materials as impacting multifamily development costs and timelines over the long term. So yeah, we're not multifamily developers, right? We do import some product more for our renovations, you know, flooring, countertops, lights, faucets, sinks. That has impacted us, but it's impacting everyone, right? So, you know, going down to the local Home Depot is still going to be impacted by tariffs. We're a little bit different in that we sort of do our 6 monthly orders. So we just got a bunch of fans and sinks and puck lights in, and we, you know, we locked those prices in, I think, at January of this year. So, you know, but now we've got a ton of product we've got to go use. So, in general, rent, the cost of construction is continuing to go up. I think it's more stabilizing from what I'm seeing, but it has skyrocketed. It's not like it's coming backwards. You know, that most of the markets we're buying in, you know, the cost of, you know, including the dirt, you're probably building to $250-$300 a unit, maybe upper 100, so maybe, you know, 200, depending on the market. And, you know, we're picking up existing assets for 110, 130, 150 a door. So we're also looking at the replacement costs in all of the markets we're buying, to show that there's a big delta, that if, you know, that particular asset was to burn down, you know, you'd have to rebuild it. So like the deal in Fayetteville, North Carolina, we're picking that up for, I think, $155 a door. The market peak was like, that's a 2012 bill. That was the market peak was, I believe, around $220 a door. To rebuild that thing to get today would probably cost you $230, $240 a door. You know, there's just great stories that you're picking up discounts to market peaks, but you're also picking up discount to the replacement cost in today's environment. So thank you all for joining us on a Wednesday night. I really hope you got a lot of good key tidbits out of this. This recording will go up on the YouTube channel. So, you know, please share it with anyone. The recording link will go out tomorrow, forward on to friends and families. We aren't trying to be, we're not oracles. We're just trying to give you data-driven decisions and seeing what we're seeing in real time, and just having open discussions with you with the Q&A. So hopefully it's been helpful. Again, thank you so much for taking some time. Ben, any closing words?
Yeah, look, thanks so much for joining, guys. We really do think it's a great time to be getting into the multifamily market. And if that's something that might interest you, you know, reach out to us. We'd love to chat. Otherwise, have a great night. Thank you very much.